Nice to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start our program today by talking with you about recycling and some other solid waste issues. Joe Van Rossum is a recycling specialist for the Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. It's located within Cooperative Extension, and his role is to provide technical assistance, and he does some outreach work for Wisconsin communities and businesses, especially in the areas of recycling. So we're really pleased to have him with us today. Joe, welcome. Nice to have you back.
Good morning, Larry. Glad to be here.
And also with us today, Paul Abramson of Madison, co-founder of Madison Recycling Away From Home Volunteer Community Recycling Education Project. It's nicknamed. Fortunately, Paul, it has a nickname because that's a long title.
Right, and really, the entire name of it is hardly ever used because of the fact that it's so ponderous. But Madison Raw, it's easy to remember, and we use it in reminding people that if they want to learn more about recycling away from home, which is what RAH stands for, that we are here to be a conduit for that at festival events, and also we're interested in just generating more knowledge, more experience for individuals who want to have it happen wherever they go, at facilities, on the street, in their communities, everywhere.
Okay, so away from home obviously implies, as you were saying, some events like a 4th of July celebration. Would that be an example?
Sure it would, but away from home could also be literally walking down the street in your neighborhood or in your downtown. Mm-hmm. My experience, which has brought me here today, has been working with community events here in Madison, which are the larger gatherings like a 4th of July celebration, like a music festival, like a brat fry. Mm-hmm. These types of events occur everywhere in Wisconsin and throughout the world, for that matter. It's a celebration. Wisconsin is huge on festivals.
Yeah.
But the issue that has developed as a result of a lot of different forces coming to bear with our consumer society is there's a lot of stuff that we buy when we're at these events or that we might buy in the store while we're walking down the street. And then when we get down the street, we look for a place to recycle it in the manner that we have taken up at home. Mm-hmm. Through our municipal programs, encouraging us to separate and recycle. And we're walking down the street and, there's no place to separate it. Mm-hmm. So am I the kind of person that's going to stick it in my pocket and keep it in the car until I get home? Well, many people are. Mm-hmm. I am one of those people. Mm-hmm. But I might be a person who, out of convenience, would say, well, I guess it doesn't matter. I'll put it in the, big yeah. circular thing over here.
Yeah. And so you do some education in that area. And Joe, you've been about 3 years now?
It's a little 3.5, 4 years I've been with Extension.
Yeah. And of course, you had a lot of work connected with this prior to joining Extension. How do you compare recycling today in Wisconsin compared to, say, if you look back even 3 or 4 years?
Well, I'd probably say, Larry, the biggest change has been in how material has been collected. It's changing from the source separator or dual stream where you separate your paper into one bin and your containers into another, and single stream recycling has really been taking off across the state. We're seeing a couple large material recycling facilities, one being built in the Milwaukee area, and just announced last week there's another large single-stream recycling facility that's set to be built in the Fox Valley.
Well, you take a community like, by the way, let me give the phone numbers here. If people want to join in with a question or comment, I hope you do, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Just to look at Madison as an example, now I remember when we had to separate the paper and then we separated the glass, and now it all goes into one bin, the recycled material, be it paper or glass or aluminum. And then your trash goes into a separate recycling bin, and or not recycling bin, a separate bin for trash. And man, it's great.
Yeah, Larry, it certainly makes it easier for the resident to not have to trouble with an extra separation, perhaps. But I think the thing that came to mind to me today as I was driving to work, if we think about how those bins are picked up now, they're picked up with an automated arm, and that truck driver gets to sit in that vehicle and use a controller to pick up that recycling bin, as opposed to stepping out of that truck 300 to 400 times a day. And there certainly was a lot of ice on the ground today. And
yeah.
So that's 300 or 400 opportunities for that driver to get hurt. So it's a little bit safer for the truck drivers and the collectors if they're able to collect it that way. And if it means we're going to collect a little extra material because it's easier for some homeowners to do, I think that's a great opportunity.
Well, I do as well. And there's actually quite a few people who online who have some questions. But I did want to mention, Paul, that Ra is a winner of the John Muir Wisconsin State Sierra Club Torchbearer Award. And that's going to be recognized at a special event, Recycling Success Story at the Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin 2008 Winter Conference. That's kind of a nice honor.
It's extremely humbling in the respect of finding out who some of my peers are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly not a person to think that I don't have any peers, but being a person who has sort of invented an advocacy project here in Madison because I wanted to do my part at neighborhood festivals in my Williamson-Marquette neighborhood here, in order to pull it off to the extent that we have become successful over an 8-year period, it's required bringing in other people. And really my goal for successful festivals as a festival organizer is to always find something that will bring more people in, either to help out or just enjoy the fun of the festival. And the idea behind the RAW project is that you can come in, have fun at the festival, and help us separate the trash at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a leap for some people, but it's a lot of fun. But in order to get it going to the degree that we've had success now, the Four Lakes Sierra Club, which is the local chapter of the Sierra Club, of which I'd been a member for a number of years, became involved a few years ago. And it was by virtue of working more closely with the Sierra Club people that I believe that this came to the attention of the John Muir chapter, which is the statewide branch of
that. Yeah. And as we go along here, at some point I'm going to have you comment on some things that communities can do. By the way, you have a website, too, that people can go to.
Right. The website for our project in Madison is www.madisonrah.org. And we use that to get inquiries that we can respond to. We use it to recruit volunteers during the spring for our events that we work with during the summer. And another really important website in the state is the Be Smart website, which is in the Milwaukee area, but it's a great resource for any event that wanted to learn about, you know, doing recycling. That would be www.besmart.org.
Besmart.org. Right. Okay. Well, Rich in Sauk County has a question for you, and Rich has been waiting a while. Rich, hi. Thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Good.
Thank you for the show. I've been just looking for some place. I have a telephone. It's a landline telephone. It's about 7 years old, and it pooped out on me, and I do want to get rid of it, but I don't want to just throw it in the garbage. And also electronic equipment and stuff like that, radios even a TV. I got an old TV that, what do you do with it?
Okay, well, let's turn to Joe for that to begin with here.
Well, Rich, the electronic waste that you're describing is quite common, and it's the fastest growing portion of our waste stream today. And certainly it depends on where you are across the state as to your access to the recyclers of this sorts of equipment. Typically, there's private businesses and enterprises that are available that will be able to take those materials and recycle them for you. They probably will be charging you a fee at this point in time, but most of the time that it's somewhat difficult to have access to those sorts of collection programs if you are in a rural part of the state.
Yeah, is there a place like in Madison or Baraboo or something like that?
Yes.
There are certainly a few places in the Madison area. Probably the easiest way to do it is to pick up the phone book, look underneath recycling or computer recycling, and you should be able to find a handful of companies that should be able to help you out.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And he was talking about a landline phone, but I know we had some cell phones that we actually just took back to the company, and they take them back, and they either recycle them or they actually pass them on to people who need
the company that you
the company
got
that
the
I
phone
work with,
from.
Yeah, that they actually give them to people who can use them but may not have the money to use them. So there's some of that going on, at least in the cell phone area. Vivian in Green Bay, I believe, is next. Vivian, hi.
Hi. I have cats. Years ago, cat litter used to be strictly clay, crushed clay. We've moved to the scoopable cat litters, and I've looked at the ingredient panels, and they refer to things as clumping agents or bonding agents. And I'm wondering about the best way to dispose of that. I do have access to acreage that I could throw it out on, but I don't know if that's good because I don't know what the components are.
Yeah. Joe?
Well, Vivian, typically cat litter, in some communities you're able to dispose of it along with your ordinary trash, but there are some communities across the state that do not allow cat litter to be disposed of along with your ordinary trash. So perhaps burying it in your yard is an option. The clumpable cat litters, without knowing the specific brand or ingredient list, as you talked about, for the most cases, I'd probably say you're okay. They're probably still using clay-type agents that will provide that clumping effect.
There is a product on the market. They sell these at the Williamson Street Grocery Co-op here in Madison, which is one of our collaborators on the Madison Raw Project. I cannot think of the brand name, but it is a type of biodegradable plastic bag, which is sold in a volume package, which is designed for you to scoop your box into the bags,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the bags are flushed down the toilet. This is just another waste disposal of a general nature that way, and so that would help you keep from having, large quantities of spoiled cat litter. We have three cats ourselves, so we use quite a number of these things. And I'm sure they're generally available, but if you called the Williamson Street Grocery Co-op in Madison or looked at their website, I'm sure they'd be able to help you.
Or check with Vivian's calling from Green Bay, so there may be a co-op store that's in the area, in her area, that might be able to help out too.
Right.
Talking recycling and other solid waste issues today with Joe Van Rossum, recycling specialist for Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center, located within Co-op Extension, and Paul Abramson, co-founder of the Madison Recycling Away From Home Volunteer Community Recycling Education Project. I'm not going to say that again. I'm just going to call it Madison RAW.
Thank you.
Madison RAW. I'm Larry Beeler. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking recycling today, and we're talking recycling in your own home and in your own community, but also recycling in your community, but when you're away from home. Paul Abramson is working on that. He's the co-founder of the Madison Recycling Away From Home project called Madison RAW. Joe Van Rossum with the Cooperative Extension, where he's a recycling specialist, are two guests today. So certainly join in with your questions and comments if you would like to join in. Mary in Duluth, Minnesota has a comment or question for us. Mary, hi. Mary, are you there? I'm not hearing Mary. Oh, we lost Mary. Well, let's try. Oh, Mary, are you there? Now I think
I'm here. Are you there?
Now we've got you. Okay.
great show. I just had heard the woman who called about the clay litter that has the chemical agents. I was just going to mention, in case some people aren't aware, I buy this, it's called Sweet Scoop. It's just wheat that clumps, and so there aren't any chemicals or additives or anything to worry about. It's just plain old wheat, which is, I assume, you know, clay isn't ultimately a renewable resource, but wheat is, and so, plus it doesn't have any additives. So, and it works just as well as the clay clumping litter, so I just thought I'd
throw that in. Sweet Scoop.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thanks, Mary.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Let's go to, let's see, Marcy, I think, is next. Marcy, or no, I think it's Paul in Milwaukee. Paul in Milwaukee's next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I used to work for government, and we had tons and tons of paper, and what happened is that the public seemed to be opposed to us destroying anything. And there were always legal challenges and everything to absolutely everything. We had materials going back to 1946, and we were paying rental money to store these items. On top of that, some of them had to be moved from one location to another as we used different offices. It's an issue that I think people have to understand that they're actually raising their taxes by trying to oppose government destroying things, and yet there's seems to be a belief that every time you destroy something, you're trying to hide something. Mm. So.
Okay, so that's a little bit different issue there. Joe, you want to comment on that one?
I guess the issue that I would be able to address is, the document destruction aspect of it, where people, when they do put sensitive documents out for recycling, they want to make sure that that sensitive information isn't used to create different credit accounts and give themselves a bad credit report. Certainly paper shredding, and after you shred your paper, you can put it into a paper bag and put that out to the curb for recycling collection as well. And if you're in business, certainly there are a number of document destruction firms around the state that can provide that service and then recycle that paper after it's been shredded.
Yeah, that begs the question that Paul's raising, which is people wanting to preserve everything. But I guess that's for a different topic.
I think that really
for a different show.
Goes beyond.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Marcy in Manitowoc, your turn now. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. I have two comments to make. First one is, like, in public colleges, like public classes, and at gas stations and when traveling, there's the lack of the recycling facilities. It's always the waste can. That's where all the plastics and the aluminum cans go. But is there any laws on the books towards forced recycling by these places? Because otherwise, out of convenience, all this is thrown in the waste there.
Yeah.
And another thing I have to say is my cell phone. I heard the other call about the cell phone that I lost the cell phone in order to get a replacement. It was going to cost me $175, but I was able to go on eBay and get a used one from somebody else. As long as it was from the same company, I could get it for $30 and save all that money and use somebody else's phone.
Well, that's a good point, too. But let's get Paul Abramson to comment on your comments about not having proper recycling container many businesses and elsewhere in communities.
This is really the gist of my issue here is that in order for you to have the right container, everywhere you go, you may think that there is some regulation that would make this happen, and in fact there are laws on the books administered by the DNR for this purpose. However, regulating it is nearly an impossibility on a case-by-case basis, and that's why it requires a grassroots effort. And what I mean by that is that you, as a person out there traveling around, you go to this store, you shop there, you use it while you're traveling, even if you only go into a gas station, once in your lifetime while you're traveling somewhere, you can take it upon yourself to speak to the manager or just the staff person at the cashier and just say, have you ever thought of having a separate recycling bin? You're selling these goods here, which are recyclable, glass bottles, packaging, cardboard packaging, which is, all recyclable pretty much everywhere in the United States. How about having a separate recycling container here at the gas station? That's what recycling away from home is all about, but it has to be generated by a person who really wants to have it happen. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the DNR, you know, they will not ticket a business for, you know, being absent on their recycling effort unless it's a result of a complaint. So as an individual, you know, if you, you know, have taken this initiative with a business owner and you haven't gotten any results and you really think it's important, contact the DNR. You know, they'll follow up on it. But it has to be based on, you know, someone taking the initiative and saying this should change.
Usually if I'm, and I assume a lot of people do this, and I don't know if it's the proper way to do it, but if I stop at a gas station, let's say I get a can of pop, and I'm, if I'm on the interstate, sooner or later I'm going to have to stop at one of the rest areas, and that's when I get rid of the can of pop because they have the recycling.
Right, and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation has some of the most elegantly developed recycling facilities at the waysides that I've seen anywhere.
Yeah, they're really quite nice, and
many of the state DOTs throughout the country have really embraced this thing, and they're really, you know, going for it. And I assume that it contributes to the revenue of that agency, but I don't know. But that's just the thing. I mean, you're going to carry it in your car until you find a place to get rid of it.
Yeah. Joe, a comment from you?
Yeah, and really what Paul was saying is true. Businesses are in the business to make money, and they're going to respond to the demands of their customers. And if customers are asking for a specific service, and in this case that service is to provide recycling bins, if enough people ask for it, they're going to start to provide them because they're going to see that as an advantage that they can have to have more customers coming to their stores because they do offer recycling as an option.
This goes back to a very simple concept, which is, you know, how can one person really, you know, make a difference? And my belief is that one person really can make a difference because when you take the initiative yourself to speak up for what you want to have happen in your perfect world, then frankly, you're going to feel better about the situation yourself because you knew that you spoke up and you said, hey, how about a recycling container here at the gas station or here at the supermarket or at church or at the football stadium or wherever you happen to be? You know, I'm astounded by the things that I catch on to just in passing. The Philadelphia Eagles football organization has a huge recycling program as part of their stadium operations. It's one of the leading sports enterprises of the country, a successful, you know, sports franchise in one of the biggest cities in the United States, and they have this huge project which is embraced by the entire community and is fostering all sorts of alternative energy education and just
nice spinoffs.
Just great spinoffs. And these things, and this is not unique, the Green Bay Packers have a very well-developed recycling program that goes on in their parking lots for the tailgating. So these things are out there in the marketplace, and it could be small, it can be big, it can be an individual effort, it can be a group effort, but it requires that you do something about it yourself.
Andrew in Pewaukee, let's go to you now. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I had a few questions for your guests about the efficiency of recycling, about in particular paper, plastic, and glass. And I guess I kind of was inspired by a certain Penn and Teller show, which I cannot mention on the air, but they brought up several points as to the efficiency of recycling and the amount of energy put into it, both in the plants and the collection, the separation of the waste, and then also in the fact that the landfills aren't necessarily a bad thing. You know, I'm definitely into the free cycle movement and reduction of waste, but as far as the actual recycling of waste, how efficient is it and how much does it end up costing taxpayers? And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. That's a good question. Let's turn to Joel Van Rossum for that. Joe, do you got some figures on that?
Well, Andrew, I think things are a little bit different than perhaps were presented in the Penn and Teller show that you referenced. Recycling certainly does save energy. and it is worthwhile to do. The materials that you put in your recycling bin have a value, and the communities that have figured out how to do things efficiently, certainly there's some collection programs that are more efficient than others, but once they get those materials collected and separated, they have a high value. For example, the newspapers, one of my ongoing projects is to survey recycling facilities across the state. And in December, the average price they were receiving for a ton of newspaper was $108 per ton. If we compare that to the statewide average cost for disposing of materials in landfills, it's in the $36 to $38 range where they have to pay for it. Mm. So there's certainly a difference there. To say that it's not important to be collecting these materials, I think, is a false assumption. Because once we bury something in the ground, say you bury an aluminum can, you throw it in the trash, it ends up being buried in the landfill, or a tin can and has to be buried in a landfill. Does it make sense to be burying something in the ground and then turning around and digging a new mine to mine the new bauxite ore or the new iron ore from different parts in the world, and then the transportation costs to move those raw materials and process them into an aluminum can or a steel can? So, you know, certainly recycling does make sense, both from an environmental standpoint and from an economic standpoint as well.
I have a comment on this, which, you know, is not in disagreement with Joe, but, you know, the thing about the markets for the recyclable materials is something that is frankly, it's a difficult thing for an average person to, you know, wrap their head around. As an event recycling activity, one of the biggest things that you're confronted with is that food and beverages are served in disposable containers. Now, in Europe, in some places, and in Australia, there are dishwashing companies. They come out with a trailer that's, you know, like a food cart. It has industrial dishwashers in it, and the food service is done on China. And the beer and the beverages are served in glass or mugs, and it's washed, and the silverware is all taken home with it in the evening, you know, after the festival. This is not common in the United States, although it could be. But the flip side of it is that most of the serving material that we get at the art fair or at the Willie Street Fair that I'm associated with or the other festivals in Madison has clamshell takeout containers that are made out of styrofoam, which is not it's not recyclable at all. And it's a waste of petrochemical, in my view. Beer cups. Okay, the common cup that you get a beer served to you at a festival is made out of a number 6 plastic. There is some evolution on this right now with number 5 plastics, which in some contexts are recyclable, but based on local ordinances and how things can be reused and whether there is a market for that plastic out there, you know, in the recycling markets, will determine what types of plastics you can use and attempt to recycle. We've had a lot of experience with this with the Madison Project because we, in agreement with the city of Madison, tried using number 5 beer cups for a couple of years because we were under, including the city of Madison, we were under the impression that they were recyclable. However, the volume that we were generating with that plastic was not sufficient enough to develop a market, and so there was no place to go with it.
Yeah,
and so these are elements that this gentleman, you know, might also be thinking about: is that can all the stuff be recycled? Not yet.
Yeah, Diane in Green Bay, it's your turn next. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to know. I know Brown County is going to be eventually going with the single source, and what I wanted to know is there a requirement for the paper cardboard to be bundled together or just loosely thrown into the container? What's the recommendation that I can tell my customers, you know, when they're going to recycle?
Okay. Joe?
Well, hi, Diane. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Well, that's good. The question you pose is very interesting, and it's really going to depend on the community to make that decision how they're going to collect those materials. Certainly, if they're going to collect it in an automated cart, the materials will probably be put into the cart loose rather than being bundled. However, if the communities are going to continue to use bins or bags as their collection method, certainly bundling of the cardboard will take place as well.
Yeah. In Madison, with the single source, it's just you put it in. They ask you to sort of order how you put things in.
And then cut it down to a certain size.
Yeah, and cut it down to a certain size, but that's pretty much it. And I've had a hard time actually figuring out on a single source why it's important to order them in a particular order when they all go into a truck anyway. And I suppose there may be some savings in time.
Well, Larry, the order probably has more to do with how those materials come out of the cart when it's dumped into the truck.
Oh.
If you use a lot of force and effort to shove a cardboard box or a folded box into the bin, it may become wedged or lodged, and it may cause the driver a little extra time to empty the material out of the cart, or you may come back at the end of the day and that piece of cardboard is still wedged in your cart.
That's a good answer. I'm glad to know that. I've often
customer
wondered
satisfaction.
I've often wondered about that.
Also, I had one other thing.
Yeah.
When we do switch over, are we going to need to obtain the 65-gallon wheeled carts again, or can the 18-gallon boxes still be used?
Well, Diane, again, I'm going to follow that up. It's going to be a local decision to make. You know, certainly where your material ends up being processed and who is collecting the waste will all have an impact. Put into the decision-making process as to how that material is collected, whether it's collected in, say, an 18-gallon recycling bin or in a 65- or a 90-gallon cart. That's really a local decision that gets made.
And I think we have options in the Madison market, at least. You can have different size depending on how much recycled materials or how much waste you actually generate. In the course of a week or a two-week period. I think it's every other week for the recycling.
Right.
So that a lot of that – so sometimes even when the community has to make the decision on what sort of bins to use, sometimes you'll still have options within a community, of at least in terms of the size of the containers. I got to tell you, though, Diane, you're going to like it when it comes.
Oh, I bet.
You will.
It saves a lot of goofing around.
It saves a lot of goofing around, and it's one of the, in a contentious community like Madison, it's one of the few things, I think, I forget who had a
Doug
note
Moe
about
mentioned
Doug
Moe.
Doug Moe mentioned it. That's right. Doug mentioned
it. Local columnist mentioned it in the Capital Times, I believe, that this was something that, you know, it rolled out, a public program that had rolled out so seamlessly and without, without a great hue and a cry. And it's true. It's true. It's just a very, very convenient way of handling your residential trash and recycling.
Diane, thanks again. I want to give Rich from Edgar a chance to be on, too. Rich, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question for your guest. There's a piece of legislation pending sponsored by Representative Mark Pocan and Senator Bob Josh from up north that it's essentially a plastic bag ban at the retail level, assuming that they would then use these more or less corn-based or other sorts of biodegradable bags or a certain other type of product. Do they have any comments or, do they have any assessment on that piece of legislation?
Where that legislation is right now?
Or how they feel about it.
All right. Well, Joe, what do you think?
Well, that's one of the most common questions I get is paper or plastic when you're at the grocery store. And my common response to that is neither. Get yourself some reusable cloth bags, and it eliminates that need for that question. Of course, you have to remember to bring those cloth bags into the store with you. But the plastic bag issue is something that a lot of communities are facing. It's not so much a solid waste issue in some places, but it's a litter issue. We often see those plastic bags blowing in the street in the wind, hung up in the trees in the spring. And some of this legislation, whether it's a bag tax or to outlaw the use of them, it's gained some traction in many parts across the country.
I probably would sound like a typical Madisonian on this, but I have to tell you that a tiny article in the Utney Reader in 2002 was one of the things that propelled me to get involved with recycling away from home, and it had to do with Ireland, who the previous year had outlawed plastic bags. It's not to say that you can't use a plastic bag or get one in Ireland, but there's a high tax on them. And so it has encouraged, you know, just a huge evolution of sustainability and energy-saving projects in Ireland because of the removal of this litter, mainly as a litter issue, because it hangs up in trees, it causes damage to vegetation, it hurts the animals out in their natural environment. It jams up machinery in the cleaning of the streets. There are all sorts of things that have to do with these very, very fine, thin plastic bags. You can use them over and over again. Every week, I must generate, you know, 60 or 70 of them at least. Your newspaper comes in one every day. The newspaper organizations in Madison do not have a program for recycling the bags. I spoke to the editor on the phone about it one day, and he said, oh, I just put it in with the recycling. And I said, it's not recyclable. Yeah. I mean, they don't know. And this is a whole process that has to do with, you know, educating yourself as a consumer. Is it really necessary to have a new plastic bag every time you make a purchase? That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. Well, I know the grocery store that I go to in Madison has made available some nice cloth bags now that are Woodman's that were really cheap. I think they're selling them at cost, and they're pretty. They look nice, and my wife...
And that generates, economic development to create bags, make them out of natural fibers. There's all sorts of, you know, things that have to do with, you know, rebuilding economies that come out of, you know, the cost savings for products which, you know, are wasting petroleum.
Well, if people want to learn about community recycling or recycling away from home... here we are about out of time. Paul, you've got your website, www.madisonrah.org, and people can go there and get some information and learn how to, if they want to volunteer or do some
work. I'd really encourage people to go to our website. There'll be a list of the events that we work with here in Madison. There's one every month in the Marquette neighborhood here in Madison, and they are completely volunteer-run. And we're looking to recruit more volunteers and bring in more collaborators. And if I can personally help you with an event anywhere in the sound of our voices, I hope you'll send me a message to that website. I'll be happy to help you.
Okay, that's Madison, R-A-H, or Ra, madisonra.org. And Joe, you've got a website too.
Yes, I do. Our website is www.uwex.edu/SHWEC.
Schweck.
Schweck. And we have all sorts of recycling information and resources, as well as lots of home composting information as well. So
that's uwex.edu/SHWEC. Guys, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll do it again.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Larry.
Joe Van Rossum is the recycling specialist for the Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center. It's located within Cooperative Extension. Paul Abramson, co-founder of the Madison Recycling Away From Home Project. It's called Madison Ra. Pleased to have them with us. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's usually the way it works. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Farmers Direct Marketing with Don Schuster, an outreach specialist for the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.